Wheeland Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, a proud supporter of WQPT, has been serving Quad City families since 1889. Now providing live stream capabilities for viewing your loved one's funeral or memorial service at their chapel in Rock Island.
Celebrating 100 years since the passage of the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote, and opening a show at the Black Box Theater, The Turn of the Screw is presented with face masks for actors and the audience, performing during a pandemic in the cities. Since the pandemic, entertainment venues have all been shut down, but now they're starting to reopen, including The Turn of a Screw, which is a performance that will be performed in front of an audience wearing masks, as the actors do the same. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, celebrating the passage of the 19th Amendment. It's been 100 years since that historic vote to grant women the same right as men when it comes to voting. The Putnam Museum is now opening a new exhibit, Liberated Voices, Changing Lives. It takes a look at not only the suffrage movement, but also how women's lives have changed in the Quad Cities and around the world, giving them more of a chance to fight for their very own rights. And joining me is the curator and historian at the Putnam Museum, Christina Castell. You've been closed for a long time, like everybody else. What is the Putnam doing now to open up to the public?
Well, we're really excited to be back open to the public now, but like all the other businesses in town, we are taking precautions. So we ask that people call ahead, because we're limiting the number of people that can be in the building to aid in social distancing. So call ahead to get tickets and get a time slot so that you won't be forced to wait. And we request that people wear masks, but don't require it. For your safety and safety of the other people in the building, it's just a courtesy.
It totally makes sense, of course. Now, people, I think at this point, would expect that. You kind of had a soft opening, kind of like Niabe Zoo is where you let the members come in first. What did you find out when that happened?
Well, we found out that our cleaning protocols work very well. We've been having a set cleaning protocol throughout the building to aid in keeping the facility clean, something that we didn't do on a daily schedule with, you know, today we're going to do this gallery at this time, etc. So, you know, it's a nice practice that's been established.
It's been very strange for everybody. A museum is no different. I mean, you don't have the sound of kids running around. You don't have the bustle or crowds of lines of people. How strange has it been at the museum over the last few weeks?
It's been strange, but it gives us an opportunity to get a lot of work done as well, too. So we've appreciated that time.
Well, and one of the things is that you've got an exciting new exhibit open. This is something that the Putnam's doing more of. First off, it's kind of homegrown. It's got very much local roots. Mm-hmm. And it also is a discussion issue. We're celebrating the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage in America. And you thought this was high time to put that on center stage.
That's correct. And in fact, Maggie Tinsman had encouraged us to do this exhibit, and we took up the challenge, and it's been great fun.
Maggie Tinsman, of course, the former state senator from Bettendorf, who is also very active in trying to get more women into government. You are a historian. You absolutely love digging up the treasures that you found. Was this a labor of love?
Absolutely. It's always a labor of love to do an in-house exhibit, because we get out the treasures that were given to the museum in holding for the public and put them before the eyes of the public so they get a chance to see these treasures.
Now, I want to talk about two different things, because it's interesting by the title of your Women's Suffragette program that it is two very different things. Liberated Voices, Changed Lives. Let's talk about the Liberated Voices first. And that has to do with actually women gaining the vote, which was a crazy idea because politics is dirty and women shouldn't be a part of that.
That's what
that
they
was
thought.
The argument.
Yeah, absolutely.
Start me there.
Okay. Well, one of the things that we do feature in the exhibit is political cartooning. And you hear a lot of that type of rhetoric in political cartoons, why women shouldn't vote. Of course, there were ones for why women should vote as well, too. But the rhetoric for women was that Women were too pure to vote. They were too soft-hearted to sit on juries, which would have been a part of a voter's duties to sit on a jury, that they should be above politics. Women said, no. We think we should be a part of politics. We are part of the governed. We should have a right to say who's doing the governing.
And it took quite a while for women to gain the right to vote, but locally it's interesting. And you said that part of the fight for voting was difficult in the Quad City area because of the Germanic background of so many people in this area.
Yes, unfortunately, suffrage got very closely tied with temperance movement, and the temperance movement, of course, was against alcohol, against drinking. And with the Germans, that wasn't acceptable because part of their culture was wrapped up in beer. You didn't drink water in Germany, you drank beer. And so the thought of, you know, banning beer was abhorrent to Germans, especially since we had attracted a number of German brewers here to this community.
Absolutely. So what was the sea change? I mean, were we one of the last areas? I mean, was it begrudgingly adopted in Iowa and Illinois after perhaps the East Coast, particularly New England, we saw the first states. But was it late to come to this area?
Somewhat late, but even before suffrage was enacted on a national level, there were some forms of suffrage in the region. Women were able to vote on local elections in Illinois. And temperance also came in earlier than women's voting too. So what people had feared is that with suffrage, women would get the vote and we would have prohibition, which actually is indeed what happened. But here in Iowa, we started prohibition before women gained the vote. So what the Germans feared would happen happened before women got the vote.
That's the liberated voices part. Let's talk about the changed lives. And one of the things from the exhibit, of course, the executive director, actually the head of the Putnam Museum, Rachel Mullins, was kind of showing part of the exhibit, which included a change in how women who did so much work at home had their lives made a little bit easier.
This was a major change in women's work where we went from the washboard, hand washing, to what was known as the electric washing machine that was invented in 1908. Both of these objects are really special because Voss washing machines actually were a local company and they were one of the first washing machines available on the market as this technology shifted to electric.
The women who worked at home had more than a full-time job to take care of their household, especially the women of modest means. The wealthy women, you'll see them getting involved in suffrage very early, but it was the innovations that started happening in the late 1800s that were household innovations that really freed women up. The electric washing machine, the electric iron, the telephone, electric lights even allowed women to do their chores at nighttime, and then they could have meetings and organize during the daytime. But you could clean house by using those electric lights at night rather than candlelight or kerosene light, which didn't give enough light to clean.
Well, let's be honest, during those times there were a lot of children as well. So, I mean, in so many different ways, that was a full-time job in and of itself.
Absolutely. And again, electric lights allowed women to leave at night and leave the children with dad, and dad could take care of the children. Or women toted their children along with them. They still do, so.
The Iron Woman was part of that change. I love this story because it has a connection to Moline and as well as the entire Quad Cities. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about Eldorado Jones, who also was part of an inventor that helped ease women's life, but she was known for what she did in the aeronautics area.
That's correct. Her aeronautics contribution was a muffler for an airplane. At that time, of course, the airplane engine made such loud noise, it still does. But she invented this wonderful muffler that cut the sound down. And she believed that if women wanted to make an impact in the world, they needed to come up with inventions, that was the best way to achieve independence in their lives. was to be an innovator, be an inventor. And she had created something called the Joyful Iron. The old-fashioned irons, those heavy irons that women used to use, cast iron, and had to be heated by sitting on the stove, were called sad irons. So she invented the Joyful Iron, which was an electric iron and lightweight. So, and actually, she built that in Moline. She set up a factory in Moline to build these Joyful Irons, and she hired only middle-aged women.
I was going to say, most of her employees, if not all, were women, and many of them over the age of 40. Unheard of at that time, actually unheard of now.
That's true, but she was so conscious of women's roles and knew that if a woman would be in need of work in her 40s, that she would be one of the best workers. And El Dorado also, if she saw a woman who was hungry, she would feed them. That was just her thing, is that she was so pro-women that she would do anything to advance women.
Not only was she pro-woman, she was anti-man.
Yes,
in
she
many
was.
Ways. Yeah, I don't think, in we've got a copy of her death notice in the New York Times here from November 27th, 1932. One of the things that's said here is quoted to her, "Do not forget to exploit men all that you can, because if you don't, they will exploit you."
She believed that. She had a father who was not a father to the family at all. He took the money from the family and ran, abandoning the family. So she had a bad taste for men in her childhood. And unfortunately, we don't know what else happened to her throughout her life, but I don't think it ever got any better for her.
Well, and let's be honest, the fact that she was very anti-man, so to speak, really was a bit of her undoing, because if you're inventing something as incredible as an airplane muffler that's revolutionizing an industry, you would profit greatly from it. But she had problems finding investors and men. She died as a pauper in a tenement in New York City. Mm-hmm. It's a sad end to a woman that had, if she was around today, would have a very different outcome to her life.
That's true, and she was just such an interesting person. I think that she's one of the people that we all would have loved to meet. And one of the things that we did with this exhibit was find some of these characters who played a role, either pro or anti suffrage in the Quad Cities, and wrote their stories up as scripts and had actors portray them.
Well, and there's another person that there's not much of a write-up for, and you wanted to make sure you shined the spotlight on her. We're talking about Mrs. Frances Baker, a person of African-American descent who still tried to make a difference in the limited way that she could, mm-hmm. because of the politics and the morals of the era.
Mm-hmm. That's true. In fact, one of the African-American suffragists said, as much as the white women need suffrage, the black women need it more. And so she was a good voice for African-American women. Very few of them, very few women, period, made it into the papers as being supporters of suffrage. But she certainly didn't make it in as a woman and an African-American woman. But we did find some evidence that she was pro-suffrage. She was an African-American activist in the community. And she, the person who portrayed her in the interactive, is portraying her as if she had gone out to Washington, D.C. for the women's march out there, because the African-American women were not allowed to march with the white women. And so she talks about that as if she were there. And maybe she was. We don't really know.
The exhibit's called Liberated Voices, Changed Lives. You are extending it until Election Day, which seems appropriate. Mm-hmm. What are you trying to tell people who need to come to the Putnam to further this discussion?
Well, we want them to be able to have this opportunity to see what the women of the past did for us. And then there's a section in this exhibit about where are we now, looking at what's going on with women now. For example, 55% of the women vote in the state of Iowa, whereas only 53% roughly percent of the men vote. So actually we're holding up our end pretty well as voters. Obviously we'd like to see 100% for both men and women, but you know, at least the women are getting out there and doing their part. But we're seeing a big gap in the salary based on gender. So we're trying to alert people to the differences that are still going on and that there's still work to do. The Equal Rights Amendment still has not passed, so women don't have any national protection for salary and things like that. So there's a lot that still needs to be done.
That's Christina Castell, the curator and historian at the Putnam Museum in Davenport. And by the way, The Vote on American Experience will be airing on WQPT July 16th and the 23rd, starting at 8 o'clock. You can catch it then, but also you can catch it on the free PBS app. Fresh Films in Rock Island is offering a video challenge to students in grades 5 through 12. It's a free opportunity to learn how to make a 30-second public service announcement that will encourage people to take part in the 2020 census. You could win a mobile filmmaking kit, and students just need an internet connection, a smartphone or tablet, and really a desire to gain some new film skills. Let's see how Sesame Street actually created their census spot.
Ah, the census. A special time when we count every person in each home in every neighborhood.
Do kids count?
Of course. Counting everyone in your home helps support your neighborhood by funding things like schools, hospitals, and buses. Complete the census by calling or going online, or return your form by mail.
It's easy, secure, and most important, it's totally private.
Make your family count!
This year, make sure every child counts. Visit 2020census.gov.
The message is clear. Be sure to fill out the census and get counted. Well, there aren't many opportunities right now to be in an audience for live music or any type of performance these days, though the River Music Experience is offering curbside concerts that you can enjoy in your own driveway. One of the featured artists will be Lojo Russo.
I can just touch the sky with the tips of my fingers. I can just taste the morning with the tip of my tongue. I can just feel the warmth of your breath where it lingers. I can just hear my heartbeat and know I'm undone. I can tell by the way that you answer my questions. I can tell by my way that I tremble your near. I can tell by the way that I act without reason. I can tell by my heartbeat I know I'm undone.
Lojo Russo. Lojo is featured July 23rd for a curbside concert. You can check out the location at the River Music Experience website. Well, as Illinois moved into phase four of its reopening recently, one area theater, because of its size, could also reopen. The Black Box Theater is located in downtown Moline. It only seats about 60 people, and is under the guidelines, it can only seat 50 or 50% of the capacity, whichever number is less. Well, when the theater was shut down in mid-March, the actors were actually already in the rehearsals for a two-person play called The Turn of the Screw. 4 months later, they're ready to put it on stage. They're ready to open, but how will the members of the audience change, and what changes are being made to keep the actors safe as well? Joining me is actress Kayla Jo Pulliam, who's in this play. What is it like to be in a production, all set to hit the stage, and then this crazy little pandemic shuts virtually everything down?
Well, we were full force in rehearsals, and then all of a sudden we were told we shouldn't be rehearsing anymore. And so we kind of took a week just to see what was happening. And then Laura, she contacted us and was like, well, it looks like we're not gonna be able to get into the theater for a while, so just keep your heads in the script and see if you guys can meet virtually. So Matt, the other actor in the show, he and I would meet over Messenger, and we would, which was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. So we would run our lines and work. And it was funny, we were trying to kind of do the blocking, but by yourself in your bedroom. So that was interesting. And I had my fiance helping me run lines and things like that. But then the pandemic, it just kept going, and we weren't sure if there was going to be an end to it. We were kind of, and Laura was, we were all up in the air. We didn't know. First, we were just going to close the first, we were only going to have one weekend of the show in April, which is when we were supposed to open in April. And then we weren't, that wasn't safe to open then in April. So we were like, let's just keep our heads in the script. And then we didn't hear anything.
Well, when you're talking about Laura, you're talking about Laura Adams, who is the director of this of the play Turn of the Screw that you're trying to get on stage. Mm-hmm. Her stage too, the Black Box Theater, which is in downtown Moline. And this theater is like every single theater across the country and every single theater across the cities. Everything is shut down. You live for the stage. You live to act. Mm-hmm. You know, you have friends that are performers, either musicians or singers or actors. Mm-hmm. This is a very difficult time because in so many ways, when you have difficult times, you turn to entertainment, sports, you turn to musicals, film, and you can't do that now.
It's true. And that's been really difficult for you, like you said, all of my friends, most of my family, we're all involved in theater and in music. And so it kind of just put a halt to everything. And so it was put on pause for a little bit, and we just kind of learned our lines, and then we were dabbling in virtual things, and you know, I doing monologues online and trying to figure out a way to keep art in our lives, and so it was definitely hard. And so I was excited when Laura contacted us and said, we're, you know, Illinois is in phase four, we're going to be able to go ahead. And so, but then at that point we were kind of like, oh, now we're going to do this show. So we kind of had a crash course rehearsal period these last few weeks where we're like, we've got to squish the last month of rehearsals into 2 weeks.
Right.
So it's been interesting.
What drew you to Turn of the Screws? What's Turn of the Screw? What do you like about this particular production?
It's spooky, and I like spooky things. It's also, it's challenging for the viewer that you have to put the pieces of the puzzle together. It's a mystery, and I loved that. I loved that when I was reading it, that I was going, oh, what's going to happen next? Did she see that? Is that what she saw? You know, and so there's all these questions for the audience, and I was intrigued by that they get to actively, you know, kind of participate in the mystery that way.
Well, and as you said, it is going to be open to a limited amount of people for your audience. Mm-hmm. How are you going to make sure that the audience stays safe? What precautions are being made?
It's limited capacity. So the Black Box is already a small theater, but we're going to, it's limited to about half capacity now. So there's going to be space between all of the seats. You're not going to be sitting right next to, you know, a patron you do not know. Also, the audience is asked to wear masks. We're going to be taking temperatures before they come in. So, you know, unfortunately, anyone who has a temperature, they will not be admitted to the performance that night. Also, the house isn't going to open until 15 minutes before. So you won't have that time to talk and mingle and potentially spread all those germs around. So really it's about coming and watching a production. Also us actors, we have face shields, so we will be protected. You're not going to get any spit from actors on you. So we're doing everything we can following the guidelines, so it'll be very safe.
This is going to be very surreal. I mean, you're used to looking out at an audience, and their reaction may not be a laugh or a sound, mm-hmm. but it's a twinkle in the eye or a smile on their face mm-hmm. that you're not going to be able to see.
Yeah, which honestly, I think that it makes us, we can't rely on the audience, and so we have to put our 100% out all the time. You know, sometimes when the audience is really enjoying it, you can kind of relax a little bit because you're like, they get it, they're into it. But now we have to give 100% all the time because we're not sure, you know? And so I think that just adds another level for us, you know, and to really give our 100% every time.
Do you have any trepidation about going back on stage?
I wish, I don't. I am so excited to get on stage and because, you know, with the face shields that we have, you know, at first we weren't sure, but you can see our face, so I can see my other actors' facial expressions, but we're not worried about our germs being spread. So it frees us to act the way we would before the pandemic. You know, I'm not worried about the mask. I'm allowed to completely be in the show because I'm not afraid of, you know, the fact that, oh, what if, you know, our germs intermingle?
Right.
You know, I'm not nervous about that. So I think it allows us to kind of, even though it's a new addition, you know, it allows us to get back to the way we would be performing without a mask, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, just getting back on the stage, I'd assume, is just joy enough.
Oh, it is. The rehearsal process and being able to, you know, put myself in a world that isn't the current world, forget about the pandemic, worry about their problems for a while, you know, is nice. It's freeing. It kind of makes me feel like an artist again, you know, and it gives me that outlet once again.
And I just have a feeling from what you had said is that you're thinking like maybe in a year, 2 years, 3 years, there's gonna be a play about a play mm-hmm. about people in face shields.
Absolutely.
And an audience filled with masks. I mean, we're living in a dramedy.
It's true, it's absolutely true. And I look forward to that. I hope I can direct it. I hope I can say, you know, I was there. I was an actor in the back in the day, you know, and I remember what it was like to perform that way. So, and I think that will be very interesting.
But for the here and now, it's really important, as you said, please come out, support local theater, support local entertainers. Mm-hmm. It's been a long haul for you as well.
It has. And, you know, theaters in local theaters particularly have been really struggling, you know, to without having, you know, shows and without having revenue at all, they've just been waiting. We've just been on hold. And so this is, please come, you know, support us and really enjoy yourselves. We've been deprived of that live entertainment for so long that I think that people are also excited about that. And so I want people to come, enjoy themselves in a very, you know, a very low risk environment, but be able to have that live feedback, be able to be in the room with people and experiencing live entertainment. So I'm really excited.
That's Kayla Jo Pullian from The Turn of the Screw. It's being featured at the Black Box Theater in downtown Moline. And as she said, please support local actors and actresses, support your local music venues, wherever there is safe congregations of people during this pandemic. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device. Thanks for taking time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
Wieland Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, a proud supporter of WQPT, has been serving Quad City families since 1889. Now providing live stream capabilities for viewing your loved one's funeral or memorial service at their chapel in Rock Island.